From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden was accused by the president of Venezuela of attempting to organize a coup against that country's elected socialist government. We begin with this report from Telesur's Cody Weddle.
President Nicolas Maduro has accused U.S. Vice President Joe Biden of plotting against his country. President Maduro warns that the U.S. government is planning a coup against the democratically elected national government. Now, he accuses Biden of being the main promoter of those plans. He adds that the plans are currently in what he called a desperate and dangerous phase. He also claims that the U.S. is talking with other governments in the Americas. He also directly accuses Biden of having talked with presidents and prime ministers in relation to the plans. Maduro calls for civic military unitary to face any attacks and for people to be, quote, alert and organized.
We'll have more on the situation in Venezuela in our newscast later this week. Hundreds of thousands crowded the streets of cities across Spain to show support for the leftist anti-austerity movement Podemos. Anti-austerity rallies also took place elsewhere in Europe. Press TV's Shirin Arfael reports.
Tens of thousands of Spaniards in Madrid have joined a mass rally dubbed March for Change to denounce austerity and show support for the leftist Syriza party that's recently come into power in Greece. The rally was organized by the leftist party Podemos that stepped into the country's political scene less than a year ago, but gained popular support since then and currently leads the opinion polls. With regional and national elections due this year, it's likely for the Podemos to win the vote as people are frustrated with the pro-austerity social party. Also, Ireland's capital and largest city, Dublin, and several other cities were the scene of mass protests against the introduction of water charges as part of the country's bailout.
From the river to the sea, Irish water will be free.
The popularity growth of leftist and anti-austerity parties, including Podemos in Spain and Syriza in Greece, have been a warning sign to pro-austerity governments and international lenders that the harsh austerity cuts imposed in recent years have been unable to lead to recovery and growth. The unemployment rate in the Eurozone stood at 11.4% in December, but official data shows the single currency bloc heading deeper into the deflationary territory within the same period. Spain's unemployment declined in 2014, with figures showing the country officially getting out of recession. Despite the fall, nearly one in four Spaniards are unemployed as investor confidence remains low. The situation in debt-ridden Greece is even worse, with the younger generation among the hardest hit. The new government in Greece, led by the anti-austerity Syriza party, came into power in snap elections a week ago by promising to renegotiate the country's bailout deal with international creditors. The new government has already rejected part of the bailout agreement that includes privatization plans. It's now preparing to renegotiate the terms of the bailout deal to ease the suffering of Greeks. Failure to renegotiate the terms of the deal could lead to a Greek default that may destabilize the Eurozone economy and beyond. Many analysts say the Syriza party's win in Greece has paved the way for other nations to follow suit and take matters into their own hands before years of pro-austerity policies bring about more poverty and unemployment.
Sergio Mattarella is the new president of the Republic of Italy. After four rounds of voting, Mattarella received 665 votes, almost two-thirds of the votes cast by the so-called grand electors, made up of lawmakers from both houses of parliament and regional representatives. Although the office is largely ceremonial, Mattarella will preside over a population that is growing increasingly restive over the austerity imposed on the country by the EU and IMF. Press TV's Covitavue has more.
A new poll suggests that 4 out of every 10 Italians want the country to leave the Eurozone. 40% of the respondents said that they wanted Italy to give up the euro and return to the lira. The figure was 26% a year ago. Many Italians believe that the EU's single currency is the chief cause of Italy's economic woes. 45% of the respondents also said that they would like to leave the country and live abroad. Italy has been gripped by a recession since 2011. The country has been the slowest growing economy in the Eurozone over the past decade.
And while Europe begins to shake off the bank-imposed austerity, Mexico's government announced new cuts Friday. Telesur's Clayton Kahn reports from Mexico City.
Mexico's finance minister Luis Videgaray announced that the administration was to cut dramatically public funding due to the recent free fall in oil prices. The minister said the country was to cut approximately $9 billion in public funding, which equates to about 0.7% of the gross domestic product. According to the authorities, the cuts will primarily strike at the country's two state-owned energy companies, Pemex, the oil company, and the Federal Electricity Commission, which provides the country's consumers with electricity. Now, about one-third of Mexico's budget comes from its oil sector, and in recent weeks, the prices of oil have gone from roughly $80 a barrel to about $40 a barrel. Videgaray also announced that the major transportation plans, such as a high-speed rail that was planned to link Mexico City and the central major city of Querétaro, as well as a train service for the south of the country, have been canceled. The minister also affirmed that social programs will not be directly affected by the biggest cuts, budget cuts in a decade. However, many economists and experts say the effects will trickle down to the population as a whole. This is Clayton Kahn reporting for Telesur here in Mexico City.
After months of denials that the U.S. has adopted a new Cold War posture towards Russia, Jens Stoltenberg, NATO's Secretary General, let the cat out of the bag last week. Press TV's Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
As he launched his annual report in Brussels, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg described 2014 as a black year for European security because of extremism in North Africa and the Middle East, and also the crisis in Ukraine, all taking place, he said, close to NATO borders. Stoltenberg has again accused Russia of having troops in eastern Ukraine. He claims Moscow is arming pro-independence fighters in the conflict zone, an allegation the Kremlin vehemently denies. Stoltenberg says NATO has stopped what he describes as practical cooperation with Russia, but he insists that military communications must remain open in order to prevent war.
We have seen increased military presence from the Russians close to NATO borders, and also increased NATO presence close to Russian borders. And of course, that increases the risks of misunderstanding, of situations coming out of control.
NATO's annual report for 2014 states that the 28-country alliance carried out 200 military exercises last year. NATO intercepted Russian aircraft 400 times, a fourfold increase on 2013. The organization spent 729 billion euro on defense in 2014. European members contributed 220 billion euro, 6 billion euro less than in the previous year.
Jerome Hughes, Press TV. At NATO headquarters, Brussels.
Zimbabwe's president, Robert Mugabe, began his term as the president of the African Union for 2015 at this year's summit, which opened Friday in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. President Mugabe and Zimbabwe are the targets of multiple rounds of U.S. sanctions. His selection as the head of the AU signals to some that big changes may be underway on the African continent. For more, we spoke with former U.S. Congressional Representative Cynthia McKinney, who has recently completed her Ph.D. in Leadership and Change from Antioch University. We spoke with her via Skype Monday. So, Dr. McKinney, who is Robert Mugabe?
Oh, I have to get used to being called doctor. Thank you very much for the acknowledgement. My first interaction with Robert Mugabe came when there was a sanctions bill that was put before the Congress, and we had to vote to approve sanctions against Zimbabwe. And in the House International Relations Committee meeting, we had a discussion on the bill prior to the House actually voting on the floor on the bill. And I only asked one question, because at that time it was Tom Lantos, and he's railing about how bad Robert Mugabe is. And then, of course, he's backed up by all of these State Department people who are testifying, oh, yes, Robert Mugabe is a bad leader, and we really need to sanction Zimbabwe. The issue was land reform. And what Robert Mugabe had done was to take affirmative action and award to the war veterans, the Liberation War veterans, a piece of the land that they fought for. That's what he did. And I never will forget that I was in Durban, South Africa, at the World Conference Against Racism, and the top of the fold headline was about Robert Mugabe, which was very informative. And basically what had happened was that Robert Mugabe had gone to a member of the Oppenheimer family and asked him to please share or donate or give back some of the land that his farm sits on so that he could, so that Mugabe could fulfill the promise that had been made by all of the countries, including the United States, on land reform. In retribution for Mugabe even daring to make the request, the Zimbabwe sanctions bill got introduced into Congress. And the important thing about it is that this particular Oppenheimer farm is the size of the country of Belgium. And he was not willing to share or give not one hectare so that the veterans of the Liberation War could farm on their own land. And in the hearing, in the International Relations Committee meeting, I asked one question. All of these learned witnesses testifying about how egregious the leadership of Robert Mugabe is. And I just asked one question, which remains to this day unanswered. I guess I should be used to that. I asked the State Department representative as well as my chairman, which was Tom Lantos, how did the farmers in question gain title to the land in question? Simple question, unanswered, because the bottom line is that the land was stolen during the colonial invasion. And they didn't have title to the land. The question of the redistribution of the land touches not only Zimbabwe, any country that was touched by colonialism has a land problem. And of course, on the African continent, that's nearly all of them. So if there's a successful land reform in one country, the Africans are going to look up and say, oh my goodness, why is my leadership not doing that?
We now bring you excerpts from President Mugabe's address accepting the presidency of the African Union, courtesy of the African Union Commission.
Your Excellencies, distinguished guests, more than 5 decades ago, I had the unique privilege as a representative of my organization, a liberation movement then, to attend the historic occasion of the founding of the Organization of African Unity in 1963, here in Addis Ababa. It was indeed a momentous occasion at which Africa decisively took destiny into its own hands. I still recall quite vividly the palpable collective resolve, dedication and commitment of our forbearers to unite and free our continent from the twin scourges of colonialism and poverty. Our freedom and the political and socio-economic progress we have thus far attained are ample testimonies of the correctness of our forbearers' vision. Excellencies, Africa has come a long way since then. In 1999, at Sirtel, Libya, we transformed the OAU structures into the African Union, this in order to take into account the current realities of our continent. We have also taken steps to strengthen the essential building blocks for greater African unity. Along the way, we have fashioned for ourselves very comprehensive and timeless programs, among which are the Lagos Plan of Action, the Abuja Treaty, and the New Partnership for African Development, NEPAD. Furthermore, we are now at the threshold of launching for ourselves and future generations yet another framework in the form of the 50-year Agenda 2063. As we move forward with this noble agenda, we must emulate and draw inspiration from the principled stand and selfless sacrifices that our forebears made to bring us a strong and united Africa that we are so proud of today. We call for renewed boundless zeal, commitment, and dedication in implementing programs and projects that we have set ourselves in the various political, social, economic, and security sectors. Your Excellencies, distinguished delegates, during my tenure as chair, I will deliberately provoke your thoughts to pay special attention to issues of infrastructure, value addition and beneficiation, agriculture and climate change in the context of Africa's development. Numerous studies have pointed out that the lack of physical infrastructure and interconnectedness in Africa has hampered economic development. Our roads, rail, air and sea route networks are not sufficiently developed to stimulate intra-Africa trade, investment and tourism. We need to continue and perhaps redouble our current collective efforts in this sector. The road and power projects that we are developing are a positive step in our quest to improve the African infrastructure. We therefore need to work and coordinate closely those partners who are committed to developing our infrastructure as envisaged in our program for infrastructure development in Africa, PIDA. Given that the continent is rich in mineral resources, and resources should be seen to contribute more meaningfully to Africa's development, they are our wealth, and we must guard against their being exploited for the benefit of others. While we continue to exploit the mineral resources, we seem not to have paid sufficient attention to their value addition and beneficiation. If the present practice of exporting our minerals in their semi or raw form continues, Africa will continue to have people without employment who languish in extreme poverty. I also take this opportunity to express our gratitude to the member states, cooperating partners, corporate bodies, civil society, organizations, and individuals who have joined efforts in battling Ebola. Your Excellencies, the people of Palestine have suffered callous murder and territorial displacement, and yet the so-called champions of human rights in the international community continue to block, and block unashamedly, every effort towards the creation of a viable Palestinian state, existing side by side with the state of Israel. The African Union should fully support the Palestinian God-given quest for statehood, based on the pre-1967 borders and membership of the international organization, including their right to be a member of the International Criminal Court. Your Excellencies, as SADC chairman, allow me also to take this opportunity to share with you our efforts towards meeting the goals of our regional organization. In SADC, we have adopted several economic strategies to propel the sub-region to greater heights, mindful of our role as a building block towards the African Union. The economic transformation strategy we have crafted is anchored on leveraging the region's diverse resources to attain sustainable economic development. This strategy encapsulated in the Regional Indicative Strategic Development Plan and the Strategic Indicative Plan for the Organ on Politics, Defense and Security, which entails adding value to commodities. To adding value to commodities and the beneficiation of our minerals. This should bring about industrialization, which as a result should catapult the region to a high level of development. We have agreed at summit level to dedicate an extraordinary summit to deliberate on this important strategy. We will be meeting in Harare in April this year to deliberate on these issues. Your Excellencies, as you may recall, during the 23rd ordinary session of the Assembly of the Union held in June 2014 in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea, we made a landmark decision there. And before I get to it, I must here thank Equatorial Guinea for having agreed when chances were that we would fail to host our soccer event. I want to congratulate them on taking the burden to host the event. And this is a country small country, they used to call it Fernando Po. As we were taught geography in school, we were actually finding it difficult to place it on the map. But now it's big enough. We have made it big enough. That's what the Unit of Africa has done. And as fortune would have it, and they are not only the ones who have had this recent fortune, Providence has provided them with oil. And others also have been discovering oil, 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 which the blind eyes of colonialists could not see. God bless. It was the work, the handwork of the Almighty. We thank him for it. For sure, African resources should belong to Africa and to no one else except to those who we invite as friends. Friends we shall have, yes, but imperialists and colonialists no more. Africa is for Africans. Let us sing. I was going to say that during the 23rd ordinary session of the Assembly of the Union held in June 2014 in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea, we made a landmark decision to declare 2015 as the year of women empowerment and development towards Africa's agenda 2063. The theme offers us a great opportunity as Africa to strengthen our initiatives and to consolidate the gains we have made in the area of gender equality and women empowerment. It also strengthens our resolve to ensure that our commitments to gender equality as enshrined in the protocol to the African Charter on human and people's rights, on the rights of women in Africa, and the solemn declaration on gender equality are effectively implemented. Cognizant of the importance of this theme, we have set aside the 2015 June African Union session to fully deliberate and develop this theme. It is now, Your Excellency, my singular honor and pleasure to declare the theme, namely, an Africa where development is people-driven, unleashing the potential of its women and youth, officially launched. And with that, I thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.